From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
We have to discuss everything. See, other administrations wanted to piecemeal these discussions. I'm literally saying that with the people of Chicago that I love, we're going to open up the table to have a full discussion of what will be necessary in order to make sure that the investments that I've made, $20 billion of new investments in Chicago over the first 15 months, that those investments don't go away.
I know how difficult this situation is, and I certainly sympathize with it. The state of Illinois provides billions of dollars to the city of Chicago every single year, and we're going to continue to do that, but we can't just, you know, snap our fingers and somehow money. We don't print money at the state level. As you know, they do at the federal level, but at the state level, we can't do that. We just have to make sure we're, you know, getting through these difficult times.
That's Governor J.B. Pritzker. Before that, Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson. Chicago has some fiscal issues to deal with, including a ballooning budget deficit. Will the state of Illinois be asked to help out? We'll talk about that and more coming up on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield. Our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, Professor Emeritus and former Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. And Charlie's also been a longtime State House reporter and observer. And with us tonight from Chicago Tonight and WTTW, we have reporter Heather Sharone. And Heather, it's always good to have you back with us.
I'm so glad to be here.
So Heather, Charlie and I, we watch Chicago government and politics from a distance here in Springfield. Well, you've got a ringside seat, so let's start with it. The city's financial picture, where do things stand right now?
Well, it's pretty dire, honestly, and the city is going to have to find essentially $223 million by the end of December to fill a gap in its 2024 budget. Now, most of that gap is caused by two things. Fewer taxes coming in from Illinois corporations that the state passes on to the city, and the decision by the Chicago Public Schools board to not pay $175 million toward one of its pension funds. This pension fund is for employees of the district who are not teachers. If the school district doesn't make that payment, it will be up to the city, and the city hadn't planned on footing that bill until the board refused to do so. So that's what the immediate financial crisis facing the city. But things are not great for next year either. In 2025, Mayor Brandon Johnson's budget director projects a budget gap of $982 million, which is more than 40% bigger than the budget gap that the city closed last year without really too much drama. But there are no easy solutions left for the city. The federal COVID-19 relief fund that had taken some of the pressure off of the city's finances, that money basically has to either be spent or earmarked by the end of this year. And there aren't a lot of other easy options for the city to raise money. The city has a lot of debt, so borrowing money would be very expensive. And nobody wants to cut services, which leaves very few good options for the mayor and the city council.
I've got to say, I would think, and I know they do this, they put together budget projections for more than one year at a time. They start looking, oh, you know, the next 3 or 4 years where things are at. They had to see some of this money from the COVID relief running out. So has this been sort of predicted that we would see Chicago have such financial problems going into the next fiscal year? And if so, I mean, why haven't they done more about it up to then?
Well, you're right. The city projected almost exactly this budget deficit a year ago for 2025. I think that the issue is twofold. One, the city has been really hoping that its real estate market would remain red hot. And that is not really happening anymore because of inflation and high interest rates. There just aren't as many properties being sold in the city. So that, which had really sort of kept the city afloat during the pandemic years, that isn't really happening. But you're right, the mayor, his staff predicted a year ago that 2025 was going to be a very bad year for the city financially. He says that he has been preparing for this and that he has been working to sort of right the financial ship that he was left by former Mayor Lori Lightfoot, and that this is just sort of the bill coming due for decades of bad decisions that have left the city's financial, or the city's budget, I should say, structurally unbalanced, that there just are not enough, there's just not enough tax revenue coming in to keep pace with the city's, not only the cost of paying its employees, but paying really down its just massive pension debt. So the city is going to spend in 2025 somewhere in the neighborhood of $2.8 billion into its pension funds, which really gives you a sense, in a budget of about $16 billion, what a huge chunk of change that is. And that really limits the city's ability to do a whole host of things that Johnson promised to do on the campaign trail. But it's a lot easier to promise to do things than it is to actually pay to do those things.
Well, Charlie, Mayor Johnson's gotten a lot of criticism from a lot of different people since he's been in office, but he's probably not wrong about some of these problems and the bill coming due, as Heather pointed out there. Some of this takes years to happen, and here we are with the city now staring down this huge deficit, and the problem all falls on him. So your thoughts on this, Charlie, since you do watch a lot of government budgeting.
Well, I have a question for Heather. What is the likelihood, you know, one of the promises that Mayor Johnson made was that he was not going to raise property taxes. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, there was a kind of a provision for property taxes to increase based on the inflation rate, kind of automatically, unless the mayor said no. Do you think there's any chance that he may have to go back on that and say, well, we're really hurting for money, we're going to have to look at property taxes? And another question I had, I believe he's been trying to refinance some of the existing debt by taking out new loans, but at a lower interest rate, to kind of kick the can down the road, but not quite as far.
So really the easiest way that the city has to raise revenue is to raise property taxes. And that is what mayors for decades have done when the city has had a massive budget deficit like this one. You're right, though. The Johnson campaigned explicitly on a promise not to raise property taxes in Chicago, and he promised to put an end to the automatic increase that was imposed by Mayor Lori Lightfoot before she one of her last budgets. It is hard to overstate how politically unpopular that automatic property tax increase was. Lightfoot defended it as sort of fiscally responsible and that it would help Chicago property owners plan for increases tied to inflation. And she made the point that, look, you know, when inflation rises, we all pay more for food and for other things, and that property taxes should be no different, and that it would help keep the city on more firm financial footing. However, she couldn't push that automatic property tax hike through in her last budget. And Johnson never tried last year. This year, however, he may have no choice but to propose a property tax hike. That will be incredibly politically perilous for him, even if it passes the city council, because one of the things that made it impossible for Lori Lightfoot to win a second term was the sense that she had broken a series of her campaign promises. And, you know, she had promised to do many different things. Most of them were progressive priorities. And once she got into office, she just didn't. So I think that Johnson, I would imagine his team is scrambling to figure out another way of doing it, or to make the hike as small as possible. It is just a, he is between the proverbial rock and a hard place. Without state approval, the city does not have the authority to impose sales taxes on things like services or to increase sales taxes significantly. The city itself has a very limited ability to raise taxes unless it's property taxes, which is why you've seen mayors time and time again go back to that to make sure that the city can stay out of the red.
I think Heather is correct. It's a very difficult thing to do. I guess one of the advantages of having the automatic increase is that you can say, If I'm an alderman, an alder person, I can say, well, that's just the way it goes. I wouldn't be for it, but it's in the law. So what can I do? In other words, it gives them a way to kind of get off the hook and complain about it without effectively doing anything. But I just don't see how the mayor can avoid bankruptcy if he doesn't figure out a way either to cut really back, which also would irritate a lot of his constituents, losing some of the services and also some of the progressive things that he's talked about doing, expanding certain programs. The money's really not there to do it. And so it's, as you say, he's between a rock and a hard place, and it's getting tighter as we get closer to the end of the year.
So Heather, I guess a big question for me as a downstate person, and of course a lot of other people that are listening to this show, is, okay, well, Chicago's got its problems, let them deal with it, but a good chance they're going to bring these to the Illinois General Assembly and ask for some financial help. Is that likely?
Well, I'm sure that Johnson would very much appreciate any help that state officials could give him. But you and Charlie know this as well as I do. It is almost politically impossible to push through legislation that benefits only Chicago through the General Assembly, which is, of course, made up of elected officials from all over the state. And there is nothing that elected officials from downstate hate more than having to explain to their voters about why they voted to, you know, help Chicago. Now, that's not saying that, you know, the democratically controlled General Assembly, of course, with super majorities in both the House and the Senate, couldn't get it done if there was the political will. I just think that the question is there that political will? And let's remember that we're in an election year. There's a, you know, and going to be a concerted effort by the Illinois Republican Party to sort of chip away at that supermajority status in the House and the Senate. And the Democrats at the same time are hoping to expand their supermajorities. So it would be unlikely, I think, that anything would happen significantly during the veto session that's coming up. Elections tend to make elected officials very reluctant to approve tax increases. And the city, by law, has to pass a balanced budget for 2024 and 2025 by the end of the year. The legislature's normal session won't begin until January. So timing is not on the city's side here. But, you know, it is, which is going to make the city's financial problems also sort of exacerbated by the city's political problems.
If I could throw in kind of a historic note, General Assembly makeup now is a lot different than it was 20 years ago in terms of, yeah, Democrats have a supermajority, but I would say that the largest slice of the supermajority is folks who are not from the city of Chicago. Whereas back when I was a reporter generations ago, the Democratic members of the General Assembly largely were from Chicago. And you had leaders like Michael Madigan, who would move heaven and earth to help the city. And it's just not the same anymore. Probably it's better this way because you have more representation. But I would guess the most significant block of Democrats is from the suburbs.
And Heather, I heard the governor say that the city leaders in Chicago have not come forward and asked for help from the state. Is that true? Because I feel like I have heard the mayor at some news conferences sort of indicate like maybe the school district there should get some money. And of course, that could help the city, as you just had alluded to earlier. So is that true that they have not made these types of overtures to the state?
Well, they haven't asked or specific changes to, you know, how the city can levy sales tax or the real estate transfer tax. And that, you know, changes in those, in that sort of levying ability would certainly give the city more financial flexibility. But you're also right that Johnson has not been shy in asking the state for as much as $1 billion to help the Chicago Public School District. And Johnson says that that is simply the money the city is owed by the state under the state's education funding formula, and that that money would essentially wipe out not just the $500 million deficit that the that CPS is facing this fiscal year, but also the projected $700 million deficit that it is facing the next year. And it would help sort of the school district sort of invest in programs that they say are crucially needed to continue what they say is a good run of, you know, increasing test scores and increasing graduation rates. Now, the state says, boy, we'd sure love to give you that money because there are school districts across the state that are entitled to more money under that education funding formula, but we simply don't have it because, you know, we are also coping with the post-pandemic slowdown. We would love to help you, but our cupboard is bare. There's just not, you know, sort of any extra money in the couch cushions. So I think, you know, depending on how you're looking at it, both are right. The question is whether Johnson's priorities for help from Springfield have been appropriate given the city's financial conditions. You saw a fair amount of criticism this week from older people who were frustrating that the city is in this dire financial condition, and Johnson spent a not insubstantial amount of his political capital getting behind the ask by the Chicago Bears for subsidies for a new stadium at Soldier Field, which remains distinctly not popular in the city, and the other sort of, you know, ancillary asks. Because if Johnson is sounding the alarm and saying that the city is in, you know, dire financial condition, and as he said, sacrifices will have to be made, I think there's a questions about whether he should have spent any time at all focused on the question of a new stadium for the Bears on the lakefront.
Charlie, do you think that's fair criticism that the mayor is receiving?
Yeah, I think it is. I think it's a misplaced priorities. And I mean, the new stadium for the Bears, it's all glamorous and all that. Oh, wow, isn't this exciting? But when the rubber hits the road, the chances of that occurring, I'll maybe go out on a limb and I'll say that I'm likely to be the next quarterback for the Bears before the Bears get the stadium on the lakefront.
Well, they could do worse, I'm sure. Go ahead.
No. But it was a waste of political capital down here. I know the media has been faulted, particularly the Chicago media, for jumping every time the Bears' plea for money comes up in the headlines. And it's like, oh, what's going to happen? Are the Bears going to get their money? Are they going to go to Arlington Heights where they bought all this land? You know, and that's not really an issue that I consider to be important for the financial condition of the city of Chicago or the state of Illinois. And I think the folks in Johnson administration would have been much better off coming down here and talking about not the glamorous new stadium, but spending their time meeting with lawmakers, explaining what the city's financial condition is, asking, what can we do? How can you help us? My sense is that's not just what they've done. And maybe this is kind of inside baseball, but I thought it was also a mistake when Johnson, in essence, booted Sidney Holman out of his administration. Now, Sidney is not a person who's got a well-known name. She's not famous, but around the legislature, she is. She's very well respected. As a matter of fact, this past spring, I think it was, she was elected to the Sam Gove Legislative Internship Hall of Fame. And that is kind of the regard in which she's held. So she's now been replaced. From my sense of it, the woman who's doing the job now really doesn't have any connections in Springfield at all. and she has some baggage. So that's going to make it more difficult, because a lot of stuff that happens in the General Assembly, as you guys well know, is based on personal relationships. It's not all just dry academic stuff. It's getting to know people, getting to trust people, getting to be able to understand what their issues are, what their concerns are, and having a desire to help them out.
I did want to save a little bit of time here before we run out of time today. Talk about a couple of other issues. Heather, we have followed and talked about on this show with you before about the migrant crisis in the city of Chicago, migrants being bused to the city, no place to stay, the city trying to find services and help these people. But what is the situation now? It seems to have settled down at least a little bit.
It has, and this is in large part to changes made at the southern border by President Joe Biden that really reduced the ability of people crossing the border to request asylum and to be allowed into the country to wait while their cases are resolved. There are fewer people entering the country. There are fewer people available for Texas Governor Greg Abbott to bus to Chicago, and that in turn has meant that the city has seen its shelter population drop pretty significantly over the last several months to about 5,300 people. Now, the city and the state and the county, everyone for the better part of a year had truly been bracing for a massive surge of migrants to Chicago, timed to coincide with the Democratic National Convention. Abbott had threatened to do so at the Republican National Convention, hoping to again embarrass Democrats and sort of make this issue a political liability for them. That never happened, which means that the city has been able to announce the closure of three shelters by the end of October. Those three shelters cost $8 million a month to operate. That means that the city is projected to end the year spending about $141 million to care for the migrants. Now, that is less than the $150 million that the city set aside last fall in its 2024 budget, and it means that the city will not need the additional $70 million that the city council set aside at the request of Mayor Johnson in April. That vote was a bruising experience for the mayor. It really exacerbated tensions between Black Chicagoans and Latino Chicagoans and exposed the racial divide of the city, where you have many Black Chicagoans deeply resentful that the city has mobilized to care for these mostly Latino immigrants when their communities have suffered for decades of under disinvestment, leading to high crime and high violence and very few job opportunities. It cost the mayor a significant amount of political capital to push that $70 million through the city council. I can only imagine that he is frustrated that he essentially had no choice but to do so, to prepare for a surge tied to the convention, but it ended up not being necessary at all.
A year ago at this time, we were sitting here, and I don't think any of us really knew where this was headed, but we thought it was going to be much more of a problem financially for the city and the state than it seems to be right now. Although there are still, I don't want to downplay it, there are still a lot of services needed to help people out, but things do seem to be a little more under control.
Yeah, and I think Heather indicated exactly why. The fact that the Biden administration has changed the rules, it's not, we didn't get all the migrants shipped here for the Democratic National Convention. It wasn't out of the goodness of Greg Abbott's heart. It was just that he couldn't find the bodies. But on the other hand, as you say, the folks who are here still need to be assimilated to a greater extent. And I'll go back to what I said, a year or more ago. One of the big things that would help is if these folks would be given work permits, because the jobs are there, particularly low level, more or less what we would call maybe menial jobs. And the folks who are here, the Venezuelans and others, are eager to work. At least that's what all the stories, the human interest stories that are written in the Chicago media, reported by you guys, Heather, they want to work. But it would be much better, I'm thinking, if they had regular work, they got regular salaries, they paid regular taxes. They pay sales taxes, obviously, now, but it would improve things a whole lot if we would clear the path for these folks who want to work and for the employers who want to hire them to be able to do so.
Well, we're about out of time, so let's go now to our notes from the field. And Heather, we'll go to you first.
Well, this week showed another or included another unprecedented moment in Chicago politics history, where you had CPS CEO Pedro Martinez publicly announce that he had defied Mayor Johnson's request that he resign as the head of CPS. I can't remember a similar incident in the nearly 40 years of mayoral control of the school district. And the fact that Martinez felt empowered enough to not only defy that resignation request, but announce it publicly in an op-ed in the Tribune, I think was a startling display of public defiance. It also now means all eyes are on the CPS board, whose members were all appointed by Johnson and have the power to terminate Martinez, triggering either an immediate dismissal if they find cause, or starting a 6-month transition period during which Martinez would be paid to help move to the district's next leader. This, of course, comes just 40 days before Chicagoans will go to the polls for the first time ever to elect members of that school board as part of a transition away from mayoral control, all while the district is struggling to negotiate a new contract with its teachers union and, of course, is trying to figure out how to cover those massive deficits I mentioned a little earlier.
All right. And Charlie.
Well, as we've alluded to, the election season is upon us. As a matter of fact, early voting has begun this past week. And one of the things that voters will see on the ballot is an advisory referendum asking whether or not there should be an additional 3% tax on individual income over $1 million. And the estimates are that would bring in about $4.5 billion in new revenue a year. Now, the current budget is anticipating roughly $30 billion in individual income taxes. And $4.5 billion would be a significant addition, roughly 15%. Wording the ballot reads, should the Illinois Constitution be amended to create an additional 3% tax on income greater than $1 million for the purpose of dedicating funds raised to property tax relief? The idea is that this money has to go for property tax relief. Now, if the voters approve it, which they very well may, it would require in the next election year, which would be 2026, an actual constitutional amendment to change the Constitution, which now says all income taxes have to be levied at a flat rate. And as a historical note, when voters were asked this question in 2020, to have a graduated income tax, roughly 53% voted no. So it may not work, but it would be a good source of revenue.
Well, that's all the time we have for this episode of State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler and Heather Sharon with WTTW's Chicago Tonight. Look for State Week where you get your podcasts through the NPR app and at nprillinois.org. I'm Sean Crawford. Join us next time.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.